I'll be glad to.
Thank you.
Okay. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you, Ms. Dorothy.
Certainly.
All right, Claire, are you here? You also can unmute yourself if you would please. Claire R. Tell me, I know you're here because I see you.
I'm gonna unmute myself, that'll help.
That helps, yes, it helps a lot. How are you today?
I'm good, it's been a busy day.
It is a busy day. How's the weather over there in Virginia?
Very rainy.
Is it?
Yes, it's soggy.
Well, better soggy than icy, as Houston would.
We're lucking out. A lot to be grateful for.
Well, right now we're having actually sunshine, believe it or not, in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Soak it up.
Let me tell you guys, I've been privileged to know Claire. I always want to call her by her last name. And again, I met Claire through service. If I wouldn't be doing service, my world would be pretty small still. And my world just gets bigger and bigger. Now it's all over the world. But Claire and I shared a passion. Claire shared a passion for institutions. She was a cheerleader for that, and I appreciate that. I know it's a specific service. I know it's not for everybody, but Claire was really interested, and so we worked on a couple of things and had the privilege to be on the outreach committee with Claire. So I've asked Claire to share a little bit with us about love, because, you know, we have all these couples, but Wayne and Claire are both single. So I thought we have to have some single people. I'm single. So Claire, I'm going to give it over to you.
Okie doke. Well, hello, everyone. I'm Claire, and I'm a very grateful Al-Anon member. And I'm very grateful to be part of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon. You're my family of choice, and it just keeps getting better and better and bigger, especially now through technology. This is great. Happy Valentine's Day, everyone. I'm delighted to speak to you about being single. And all I can hear is that song, All the Single Ladies. It wasn't my desire for me to be single, but it's just worked out that way. But I do have to say, I've been very blessed to have two great loves in my life, and I'm sure there's a third one in there somewhere, around the corner, around the bend. But we'll see about that. But in the meantime, I'm just very grateful that I'm comfortable in Al-Anon, I'm comfortable with myself, and I've learned to love myself, and maybe I've had to spend all this time learning to love myself, because I certainly didn't when I came into the program. I felt a little out of place as the Lone Ranger in recovery in my family. No one had ever gone to a support group before that I know of, or no one admitted it. I felt ashamed because I had married an alcoholic, and I was in the throes of a divorce when I arrived on Al-Anon's doorstep. It just didn't fit my dream of happily ever after, and the usual things that couples were doing back then. But I have to say that, first of all, being single has really turned out. There have been definitely gifts involved with it that I would have never foreseen. Divorce was very painful for me, because mostly I would realize after doing a lot of adult children work, like after 13 years of Al-Anon, I figured it out that I'm an adult child. But it was very painful, but in largely because I realized I was repeating my childhood. I was replicating my mother's life almost on autopilot without even knowing it. She had been divorced. She divorced my father when I was 8 years old, and our home had been a war zone, very unpleasant. I felt there was anger, there was rage, there was just sadness in my home, my immediate home. But I have to say that I did know I had unconditional love from my grandparents and from my aunt and uncle. But you know, when it's right in your own nuclear home, it's really confusing to a small child. And as confusing as that was, my parents remarried each other when I was 13. I never saw my mother date during those 5 years, and I didn't see a role model for dating, so I had to kind of learn that on my own. And I really, when my parents remarried, that was even more confusing because it was as if nothing had ever happened. They never discussed the past. And I learned in Al-Anon, though, later, you know, that it was really that their relationship was their business. It really wasn't mine as a child, but I just had put my little pug nose where it didn't belong. And I was concerned about my mother's safety because, of course, I felt that yelling loud voices was scary to a child. My mother, I knew she loved me dearly. I knew that, although she never said, "I love you." I was just supposed to know it. However, my mother was a perfectionist, and so in a very real sense, her love for me was conditional, and I felt like I had to be Little Miss Perfect, and it was really hard, very hard for me to be perfect. I think it's very hard for any child to be perfect, but I really struggled with it because I was more interested in playing with the neighborhood kids, and I'd play baseball and ride bicycles, and I was just more not really interested in taking ballet or piano lessons. So that was my mother's first disappointment with me. I wasn't like her in that respect. So my family background, I guess you might say, was shaky when I came into Al-Anon. I had no intention of repeating it. And yet I did repeat parts of it. I didn't realize that I, after college and I married my college sweetheart, and our relationship was, it started with alcohol, it was a blind date with a waste paper basket full of beer. And I thought that was wonderful. He was 21 and I was 18. And that's what you do when you're in college, you drink. So that seemed wonderful. But the drinking was always there. And of course it accelerated over time. But he was the love of my life and I was his champion. Everything was about his career. I had a career in teaching, but his always came first. And so, you know, my whole focus, what I'm trying to say, was never on me. When I came into Al-Anon, I was just felt so defeated and beaten, but you know, it got my attention. I just knew those people, as I called them, they knew something that I didn't. And I didn't want to be the way I was. I had become violent towards my husband, and I had let him provoke me. And because I didn't know any better, I was replicating what I saw in my childhood. That's how you addressed anger, where when somebody did something that was wrong or made you unhappy, you got angry and you expressed it. And so thanks to Al-Anon, I guess it got my attention because I didn't even want to be with me. And much later, I would learn when I was really, when I hit my husband, I was really hitting my father as well as my husband. And so what I'm really trying to say in a nutshell is that I took in a lot of baggage into my marriage, and I didn't take it intentionally. It just came with me, and it was conditional love and it was perfection. I didn't want to give up the marriage. I really wanted it, but it's kind of crazy because I made a list of 40 things that my husband had to do in order to come back home. And, you know, they included things like pick up socks, buy groceries, make coffee, chop firewood. I mean, there were just this endless list of things. So there I was with my own version of conditional love. But in the meantime, he had met another woman at a bar who didn't criticize his drinking. She was a good drinking partner. I wasn't, because I was busy picking up his responsibilities. And the short of it was that I wasn't really any fun to be with anymore. But I felt, you know, that it was because I was unlovable, just like I really felt unlovable as a child. And so there I was. I was going to be single, but going to be divorced after a year and a half of Al-Anon. And I'm very grateful I was in the program a year and a half. I felt love and acceptance immediately when I came to Al-Anon. I mean, I just never felt anything like that before. You know, no one really cared about the awful things that I did, and they wanted to be with me, and they, you know, and I enjoyed them. It was just so remarkable to feel that unconditional love. And I struggled accepting alcoholism as a disease, but I knew my life was unmanageable. I didn't get the aspects that it was physically, emotionally, and a spiritual illness. I didn't get it. And not only did it affect him, but it affected me. And it was very deceptive because my husband wasn't under a park bench, and he was homeless, but he found another home. But, you know, he had a great job and he was always getting promotions. So the alcoholism was very deceptive. And that replicates part of my childhood too, the high level functioning alcoholic, which my father was as a professional. Step two was really, really hard for me. I was not seeking spirituality. I just wanted to get my husband to stop drinking so I could give him my list of 40 things. But so step two was like a whole nother world for me. I never thought I'd get there, to tell you the truth. And this whole idea of a spiritual program with having a higher power who is gentle and loving and kind and there to guide me and only wanted the best for me and would help me lead a good, happy, and joyous life, it was just unbelievable. The movie Oh God came out then, and I had been such a disbeliever and angry at God. So when I saw George Burns acting as God, for a while, he was my higher power. And then I learned at meetings my higher power was anything outside of myself, or it could be anyone except me. And so I decided to have Robert Redford in a Superman suit as my higher power. It was like I had to have something tangible to see. Well, it's been sort of a running joke in Al-Anon. I still have a picture of Robert Redford on my refrigerator, just as a joke. He really isn't my higher power anymore. I learned to believe in what I couldn't see, but having this image of someone or something that I could see was very important because I had been such a doubter. And today it isn't like that with me. I feel God's presence all around me and within me. But hey, whatever it took to get me to work step two, it was worth it. Step three was more serious. I was still in the throes of a divorce at this point. I asked my group, can I keep coming if I'm divorced? And because they were all married and their husbands were in AA. And so I kind of thought I was had lost my meal ticket, but they reassured me that I was still sick and needed to keep coming. So I kept coming. I took them at their word, but it also, I guess, relaxed me enough and made me feel welcome enough to continue working the program. And I worked on step three, and it wasn't easy. I just thought, you know, I gave up being my husband's higher power, and I had to develop my own higher power. And I knew my husband wasn't interested in Robert Redford. So I was on my own, my independent self, my higher power. And I learned to, I use the slogans, let go and let God. I would have to turn over my husband to his higher power. I would make a conscious effort to do that so that I would get focused on myself. It really is hard to focus on ourselves. But I would make this decision, and sometimes I would have to make it many times throughout the day. But underneath it all, I had really internalized the idea that a gentle, loving higher power was there for me, just like he was everybody else. And so even though I was devastated that the marriage was going to end, with step three, I developed this kind of faith that if I wasn't supposed to get divorced, I wouldn't get divorced. And if I was, then it was my higher power, God's will for me, and that I could go on with my life. I had to go on with my life, no matter what. And so that's what happened. Originally, I tried to go from step one to step four without step two and three, and that does not work very well. But what trying to do that skip did for me is it made me get a sponsor. And my sponsor, who's still alive today, she's 96 years old, my first sponsor. She's not really active in the program, but she is the one who really taught me to say, I love you. Because she would say, I love you at the end of each of our conversations. I had never heard that before. No one in my family said, I love you. I just knew, like my mother and my grandparents and my aunt and uncle, like I said, I knew they loved me. And that was it. But this was actually an expression of those three words, I love you. And it's very important to say those words, and I really try to remember as often as I can to say them back at people. I have another friend, a good Al-Anon friend, who always says, I love you at the end of our conversations too. So it keeps me practicing, because when you do, I live by myself and I have a cat, and you know, she knows I love her, but it's not the same as human interaction. It's just good to be saying these words and expressing love. I struggled with self-love, and again, you know, it's very hard to give what you haven't got. And especially at first I didn't know. My first go arounds with step five, I didn't really know you know, the pieces that I was missing or how my childhood had affected me. But I learned to forgive myself with step five. I admitted to God and to myself and another human being. That was just huge. You know, I trusted God enough, and I figured, you know, God knew what I had done, but I had learned there was an element of forgiveness that I had done what I had done because I didn't know all about alcoholism at the time. And so I had to start forgiving myself. And the other thing that was so beautiful, to backtrack a little bit with step four, was my first sponsor was just adamant that I had to learn to find my assets. and as well as my defects of character, because I would go on and on about what all these awful things, but I wouldn't tell you about my sense of humor or what a loving, caring, giving, kind person I am. I didn't relate. I had to learn to identify those character traits in myself. Well, step six came along, and I got the entirely ready part because it was about at that point that I met my second great love. And he was older than he was older than me, was like about 22 years older. Actually, he kind of looked like Bill W. in a way, but the difference was that I had upgraded. This time, instead of an active alcoholic, I got involved with somebody who had been in AA and had long-term sobriety more than 20 years. And it was really wonderful to have his support and love. But I have to say, we had a 12-year relationship, which was longer than my marriage. My marriage was about 9 years. And his support was about the same time I had made a decision. I'd been very involved in Al-Anon. Anyhow, meeting him, it was just, you know, the same thing. Your heart sings, your feet go a few feet off the ground. I mean, you just know when there's, it's like this magnetic attraction. And of course, he was an adult child, as was my ex-husband an adult child. But so it's just interesting how adult children have a way of finding each other, and how, and also, alcoholic adult children, but we just find Al-Anons and adult children who are alcoholic or just Al-Anons, anyhow, we just find each other. But his love and support and just the relationship was just a good time in my life. I was happy. We were both in the program, so, you know, we would go to meetings together. We traveled together. Just a lot. There was a lot of joy. It just felt good to have a completely different relationship than my marriage. But something in me, I knew that it was not going to lead to a marriage. Sometimes we say our picker is broken in Al-Anon. And my significant other, my new buddy, had been married five times, well, twice to the same person, and he only had he had one son, and so again it was just a choice, you know, where there wasn't a real future. And today I kind of know love should be open, and wanting to go to explore the fullness of a relationship and yet being happy where it is. Well, we were involved with each other romantically for 10 years. And then the last 2 years, he was part of my move to New York from Santa Fe, New Mexico, because I had a very huge career change. I had been heavily involved in Al-Anon service in my area. I'd been a DR, a GR, DR, and then I was my area delegate in New Mexico. I was so grateful to Al-Anon and my love of the program. I was so grateful. I wanted to give back through service to Al-Anon. And yet my new partner here, he really helped me with it when I was offered a job in service at the World Service Office. He came east with me, and it was just great to have his support. It really made it possible. But like I said, I was entirely ready. I'd gotten rid of some of my defects of character, but not all of them. And step seven, I had humbly asked a higher power to help me with my defects. And but my anger and rage were soon replaced. I found myself being patient, calm, even serene. I found laughter returning in my life when the anger and the rage were dissipated. And I enjoyed, like, so now I'm coupled again in this second relationship. And when I moved, you know, we had other friends that were coupled. And then suddenly he didn't feel well. And also we started, like, quibbling a little bit, you know, like, really 2 years of living together for the first time after 10 years. You mean, what do you mean he comes with laundry? We really learned more about each other's warts. And yet, you know, we knew we weren't going to get married. It was mostly his age, his health. I really didn't want to get married. And then even though I loved him, I was sure of it. There weren't conditions, but I guess my condition was I was non-committal, and so was he. And so the relationship really didn't have a chance of going anywhere. And I guess, you know, from the past, from being divorced, I guess I thought the paperwork was the problem, but it really wasn't the problem. It was probably, you know, just fear of making another bad choice, or a choice that was less than perfect. In other words, I was still wanting conditional love, and myself, I hadn't grown through it, or I hadn't seen really this shortcoming within myself. I had worked on step eight, and there was a lot of willingness, but, you know, it was like I did the little stuff first, and there were two or three biggies in my life that I thought they were, you know, kind of hell no's. Well, we went to Florida, and my father's sister lived in Florida, and she had caused a lot of problems in my parents' marriage. But once again, I had reached a point where, you know, that the problems that she that in my parents' marriage really were not my business. And so when we went to Florida and she opened the door and I saw how much she looked like my father, it was just wonderful. My immediate thought was love. You know, it was just like, what was I thinking? You know, I had really missed out on a relationship because I had been, you know, so angry at her. From my childhood, I picked up resentments probably from my mother, and I shouldn't have picked up my mother's resentments. They weren't mine. They were none of my business. And then I also went to visit my grandparents' home in Connecticut, and I had been mad at my father's parents too because I had been angry at my father, but I felt all this love. Right away when I saw their house. It was like a living amend. But I also have to say at this point, my second great love decided that we needed to part. And this was hard, but yet I knew it was necessary intellectually. We hadn't been getting along. And some of the things that were problems were things that my ex-husband had said the same things about me. So here are two people who have never met each other, and I knew they hadn't met at AA meetings. And anyhow, I took it seriously, but yet I knew it was essential because, as I said, he was older and he had health conditions that he felt he didn't want to burden me with. And in the meantime, I'm in this new job and enjoying being of service. I mean, how lucky can you be to get to do Al-Anon 40 hours a week, if not more? I mean, it just felt right. It was just remarkable. I could hardly believe it. And so my second great love decided to go to a well, it was the Elks home, the Elks National Home in Bedford, Virginia. And so we parted, but yet we kept talking to each other. And even though we weren't living together, and I guess what I learned about this is loving again, loving enough to let go. It's easy to let go and let God when you're angry at somebody or when I'm angry at somebody, but to love somebody enough to really let go and to give them over to your higher power, it's really, not only is it a good feeling, but it's a very profound spiritual feeling. It's okay. And so that part of our relationship ended. And once again, I was on my own. And I was single. And so, you know, how would I fit in with the married friends that I had? Well, I did. And sometimes I was a third wheel and I would tell myself, well, that's all in your head. You know, be comfortable with yourself. They wouldn't have invited you or asked if they hadn't meant it. They didn't want to be with you. And so I guess it just added more confidence to being single and to being on my own and comfortable with myself. Because if I hadn't had my career, if I hadn't been married the first time, I wouldn't have had my career, a 33-year career. I recently retired, which was such a gift. It was such a blessing for me, but I felt like I had gifts to give back to Al-Anon was really it, the glue of our program, love and service. And I also want to say it was another amend that was very important. My ex-husband recently died, but I had gone to see him after about 27 or 28 years to work the ninth step. And it was really a wonderful experience. I felt like I'd met an old friend. And so there's something about these face-to-face amends that are just essential for recovery and for our own well-being, for our own selfhood and comfort. The amends is for me and the forgiveness. And that's for me too, and learning that. And by step 11, I really am believing that my higher power wants me to be happy and healthy. And if he brings another person into my life, another great love, that's fine. I'm really open to the idea. But in this time of COVID, it's a little bit difficult for that to happen. But I am very, very comfortable with myself. And I've just learned I can be alone, but not lonely. I know my higher power loves me and cares for me and supports me. And I have friends in the program. I mean, the greatest family of all is the fellowship. It's far better than anything I could have ever imagined. And I just think the program becomes a way of life. And I wanted to read something from Lois Remembers just in closing, which is the last chapter of her book, Lois Remembers, Regenerating Force. She says, AA and Al-Anon are great demonstrations of love of one human being for another, of people for people. The joy and empathy felt at one of our gatherings are beyond description, just like we're feeling right now. She goes on, I deeply believe it is love that makes the world go round. God is love, and love is the creative force, the force that ties families and friends together. It inspires us to a greater endeavor in all fields of activity, in love of God, love of man, love of ideas, love of self, and love of things. The well of love refills itself. The more one gives love, the more one has to give. So with that, I close, and I thank you for asking me to share about myself as the happy single person. As I said, that's how it is for right now, but who knows what the future brings. And whatever it is, I'm determined to live a happy and full life because my higher power is with me and guiding me. So prepared to walk those steps. Thank you.
Thank you, Claire. You know you're never alone. You guys, unmute yourself and say thank you, Claire.
Claire.
Thanks, Claire.
Thank you, Claire.
Love you, Claire. I love you. In Zeus, New York.